I'm from a proud military family. My father served in both the European and Pacific theaters in World War II. He continued his service in the Iowa National Guard for another decade. My grandfather served in World War I, and my only brother served during the Vietnam era, though not in Vietnam. I have deep respect for those who serve our nation in the military and have a determination to see that they are given everything they need in combat and all that they deserve when they return from battle. Unfortunately, my opponent's record has not been very good on veterans issues. According to Project Vote Smart, in the 2006 ranking of senators by the 1 million member DAV, Disabled American Veterans, Senator Grassley received only a 40% rating, which was the third lowest in the United States Senate. As we stand here, over 3,000 Iowa men and women have been deployed to Afghanistan or are getting ready to be deployed. For some, this will be the second or even their third deployment. It's being called the largest deployment of Iowans since World War II. Iowans are rightly proud of our troops and hope and pray that they all return safely. The war in Afghanistan has now become our longest lasting war, and it has not been easy for our troops or for their families. There really is no way for us to repay these brave men and women who have put their lives on the line. The least we can do is to provide as much help as possible for their families while they are gone and help them when they return. Today, I'd like to outline several proposals that I will make as a United States Senator to help our troops, our veterans, and their families. Number one, no veteran who wants a job should be jobless. Our troops often have trouble finding work in this tough economy. We must make sure those companies who fear that an employee will be called for deployment again do not discriminate against veterans. We must also vigorously investigate and take action against employers who refuse to rehire service members when they return from deployment, despite federal laws aimed at protecting jobs for these workers. I've been called upon to assist returning veterans with employment and other problems. We also need to create job placement programs for veterans since they have a higher rate of unemployment than the general population. Unemployment for Iraq and Afghanistan veterans was at 10.2% in September compared to our national average of 9.6%. I want to make sure that funding for the GI Bill increases to reflect the cost, increasing cost of a college education. In addition, I'll work to expand VA loan programs so that veterans will have the opportunity to open a small business if that's what they wish to do. Number two, no veteran should be homeless. The U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs estimates that over 113,000 veterans are homeless on any given night. These homeless veterans are predominantly male, single, and many suffer from mental illness, alcohol, and/or substance abuse, or from post-traumatic stress disorder. They've served in World War II, probably no one from World War I, but World War II, the Korean War, Vietnam, Iraq, Afghanistan, and in other conflicts. About 1.5 million veterans are considered at risk for homelessness. Although the VA does provide homeless programs, they have left about 100,000 veterans without help. Most homeless veterans are male, but most housing programs exist for families and women with dependent children. We must allocate additional housing funds to provide housing for veterans who have no support or family system to help them. These residents must, of course, be drug and alcohol free. As we work toward meeting the needs of these dedicated men and women who have served our country, we must also ask, why do we have so many homeless veterans? Is it a problem of recognizing the needs of veterans as they transition back to civilian life? Is it a failure of the military to hand off their service members to the Veterans Affairs Administration? Is it a lack of professionals to identify such things as PTSD? Surely, as the mightiest military country in the history of the world, we can do better, and we must do better by our veterans. Number three, better mental health and health services. According to a recent article in Army Times, new data shows that an average of 950 suicide attempts are made by veterans of all wars each month. And these are men and women who are actually receiving help through the VA. 7% are successful, and 11% of those who don't succeed the first time try again within 9 months. Suicide attempts by veterans who've served in Iraq and Afghanistan are of particular concern. The number of suicide attempts for these veterans in fiscal year 2009 totaled 1,621 by men and 247 by women. 94 men and 4 women died as a result of suicide. This data does show that the suicide rate is lower for veterans who are receiving VA health services than for those who do not receive such services. It's clear that treatment saves lives. Although the VA has increased services, thanks to Congressman Boswell and Senator Harkin, more help is still needed. Too often, men and women with service-related PTSD must wait weeks or even months before they can receive residential treatment. However, many of the Iraq and Afghanistan veterans may be barely hanging on before they even seek treatment. They can't wait for inpatient help. We must increase funding for mental health services, especially residential, so that men and women struggling with the traumatic effects of war receive all of the help that they need without delay. In addition, the number of injured veterans from the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq has led to increased wait times for our wounded troops and for all veterans. Even with recent improvements, more than 450,000 veterans are still waiting more than 30 days for their appointments. We must reduce this backlog and cut wait times. You want me to wait just a second for you? Okay. Another issue that has recently arisen is the incidence of breast cancer in women in the military. Congressman Boswell is again taking the lead after his legislative director, who is a veteran, returned from Iowa. She had attended a reunion of her unit and recounted the story of a 25-year-old from her unit who developed breast cancer and had a double mastectomy. As it turned out, maybe we could rest it on this one. Oh, perfect. As it turned out, 6 other women between the ages of 25 and 35 who were deployed to Iraq also had breast cancer. Another half dozen women had returned with new lumps that needed additional tests or biopsies. With just 70 women in the 700-member unit, this seemed like a high incidence, and in fact is a high incidence of breast cancer. As a result, Congressman Boswell introduced H.R. 3926, the Armed Forces Breast Cancer Research Act. This legislation would require the Secretary of Defense and the Secretary of Veterans Affairs to study the incidence rate of breast cancer in service members and veterans, focusing on those deployed in Iraq and Afghanistan. The goal is to find out if our service women have a higher risk of breast cancer than the rest of the women in the country, and if so, why? I'll work with Congressman Boswell to have the VA classify breast cancer as a service-connected injury if that study shows that there is a causal connection. Number four, help for families. War is hell, but not only for our troops, also for their families. It can create financial problems, marital problems, and problems for children who are separated from their parent, or in some cases, from their parents. First, our fighting troops must be paid a salary commensurate with the risks they take. It is inexcusable that Blackwater workers who do many things that our troops used to do are paid $400,000 per year, and some Iowa families of deployed troops are on food stamps. That is inexcusable. Next, no family of a member deployed for combat should be at risk of losing their home. A moratorium should be in place on foreclosures for those families while a family member is deployed and for at least 1 year afterwards. The military, when requested, should provide free counseling services to families while the service member is deployed, as well as after he or she returns. In many families, child care is sharing. In many families, child care is shared, with parents working different shifts to avoid costly child care costs. While a parent is deployed, we should provide funding to cover child care costs when needed. Other steps that can be taken include protecting our servicemen and women from fees if a service member terminates a lease due to a deployment, and allowing a service member to cancel their cell phone contracts without penalty. Some of these are not costly items, but they certainly add up for a service person who is being deployed and on a military wage. So those things like being able to cancel a lease and being able to cancel a cell phone contract are things that veterans have mentioned to us. Finally, a recently passed Iowa law should apply nationwide. No serviceman or woman should ever have their service to their country count against them in child custody cases. When my father returned from World War II, he was greeted as the hero that he was and got his college degree through the GI Bill. And he was helped with buying a home and with other services. The men and women who serve today need that very same support. A grateful nation should provide all the help a 21st century combat veteran has earned through service to our country. Thank you. And I have to say, Michael, that I think that of all the dollars that our nation spends, none are better spent than those that we use to support our veterans and their families.
You mentioned combat pay should be raised.
Yes. Well, we should cancel any remaining contracts with Blackwater, and that would go toward very substantial raises for those who are serving in combat.
If you were to cancel those contracts, who would step in and fill the voids? You know, if you cancel, is it just Blackwater? Are you talking Blackwater?
No, there are other. Blackwater is a name that everybody knows,
okay.
And it's a name that we happen to be able to get information about the average pay that security workers for Blackwater receive.
So would that mean, how would you fill the vacuum when you pull them out for things that Blackwater or other military contracts provide, such as logistics, feeding the troops, building those camps, medical facilities? How do you fill that void?
Well, the contracts I'm talking about canceling are those for Blackwater and other contract employees providing security services, doing what in the past military people have done. And in the last administration's quest to privatize everything in sight, they made very profitable contracts with Blackwater to substitute for our military members. Now, in terms of feeding the troops and housing the troops and those kinds of things, those are things that also used to be provided through the military. But there would have to be a transition period. Of course, as I understand it, Karzai has demanded that contractors leave the country. I saw that.
Have you ever represented anyone in that process?
No.
Do you have any idea of what that process is, and would you seek changes in the payroll process? Because the way they described it, it was too complicated. They didn't know they made it.
Yes, and I think that is a, I mean, how, I don't understand why it is so complicated, and the frustration of not being paid properly on top of the anxiety about going to war seems a little much to me, and I think that the federal government has an obligation to make sure that they don't impose that kind of unnecessary stress on servicemen and women. I don't know the answer to that, Kay. I know that from the standpoint of service members, you know, there are not enough opportunities to go to college, and the money, that the grants are not sufficient to cover current tuition. Anything else? Yes, yes. All my uncles, my father, all my uncles, and several generations back have served in the Army. We are Army people. Thank you all.